This is Digital Story Podcast number 1018, September 23rd, 2025. Today's theme is Fall Color, Just Around the Bend. I'm Derek Story. Spring is beautiful, summer is energetic, but autumn can be spectacular. And in just a few weeks, fall color will kick into high gear. We'll take a look at how nature creates this magical display, then talk about where and when to go to photograph it. All of this and more on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. I absolutely love being outdoors in the autumn. It's fantastic. The weather is a little bit more temperate. The angle of the light is a little bit lower, you know, not quite so flattened out from being above. And of course, if we're lucky, we have fall color too. So what I thought I'd do today is start out talking a little bit about the science of fall color and then talk about a location so that you can find your own magical fall color photo subjects. All right, let's talk about the science of fall color. And I'm on a site right now called explorefall.com, and I have a link to it in the show notes. And it has a couple things going on. First of all, it has this really cool interactive map that shows the prediction for fall color all across the U.S. And it's really neat. So you can kind of just move a slider to when you're going to be out and about, like if you have a vacation planned or if you have a few days off or something, you can move the slider to those days and then see where the prediction for fall color is. And they have it as, you know, mild color. Well, actually, they have little to no color, low color, moderate color, high color, peak color, and past peak color. It's really a cool thing, and I think you'll enjoy it. And again, it's on explorefall.com. I will have the link in the show notes. But another thing they have is a little bit about the science of color. I want to read you what they have to say here, because I thought it was interesting. Two primary factors control the timing of fall foliage: daylight and temperature. That means the further north and the higher in elevation a tree is, the earlier it will reveal its colorful canopy. Photosynthesis grinds to a halt when the days grow short in the fall and leaves no longer have the need for their excess stores of chlorophyll. Over the course of a month or two, the concentrations of chlorophyll diminish, allowing less concentrated chemicals to dominate, turning the leaf red, yellow, or orange. The rate at which this change occurs varies amongst tree species, so it can be difficult to pinpoint a single peak in fall foliage. Nevertheless, when the vast majority of trees in a particular area have full canopies of autumnal color, peak has arrived. Some areas, particularly in the northeast, experience vibrant red peaks due to an abundance of maple trees, while others experience a mixture of all the fall colors. Different trees display different colors, giving each region its own unique peak. So then they get into, well, when does the peak arrive? Well, we all want to know, right? That's the big question. For most of the United States, peak fall color arrives in the month of October. This is when wide swaths of the Northeast, Midwest, and Western states are aglow with bright fall foliage, and more than 80% of travelers make their fall foliage trips. Some less populated regions will peak in September, August in northern Alaska, while the southernmost states hold off until mid-November. By the way, I just want to do a footnote here. So the way that I plan the autumn workshops is that we're going into altitude the first week of October on the eastern side of the Sierra, which is where I think the fall color for California is the best. So we're up higher, we're a little bit more north, and then in November we're in Santa Rosa and Sonoma County in that area, And the fall color comes a little bit later there. And, you know, we always, when I first moved to Santa Rosa a number of years ago, quite a while ago, I was always thinking, okay, it's October. Where's the fall color? Where's the fall color? And then October would roll on. You're looking at the trees and going, what the heck? And then every year, about early November, then you start to see the vineyards turn and start to see the trees turn and all that. So it really does depend on where you are. And when I figured this out, I go, okay, in October, I go to the Eastern Sierra, go up in altitude, go a little further north. And then in November, I hang out in Sonoma County and I get two shots at fall color and two different looks. You know, when we go to the Eastern Sierra, we're going to be looking at a lot of aspens, and the aspens are quite beautiful, the quaking aspens, and especially as they're turning color, and then, you know, the breeze, you know, moves the leaves. That's why they're called quaking aspen, and they sort of shimmer. This is a vibrant color. It's really fabulous. Whereas in Sonoma County in November, we're dealing with the vineyards. They're just absolutely beautiful, especially the vines for red wine. Oh boy, they can just get some really crazy reds and greens and oranges all mixed in together. And then of course we have some trees as well, although not the density of trees like we'll see in the Eastern Sierra. So where you are really does make a difference, as you already know. And that's one of the cool things about this map I have the link to, because you can really see at any given time where the best areas are to go for fall color. All right, so let's get back to what they're saying here. The most popular fall foliage displays are found in New England, where approximately 10 million people travel each year in hopes of photographing or simply walking through fall's splendor. Northern Vermont, New Hampshire, and northwestern Maine experience peak in early October, while much of New York, Massachusetts, and Pennsylvania have to wait until later in the month. Out west, golden aspens peak in sweeping displays in late September and early October, just prior to the invasion chill of winter. Non-desert lower elevations in the northwest are further delayed until late October, early November. However, the wait is well worth it, and I agree with that. So then they get into talking about planning for a fall trip. If you've ever traveled in search of fall foliage before, you'll likely know how tricky it can be to be in the right spot at the right time. Yes, and try planning a workshop for fall color. It's even more stressful. The timing of peak color varies significantly season to season, meaning that what worked one year might not work the next. The best fall trips take careful planning, a lot of patience, and a reliable fall foliage map. If at all possible, don't solidify your plans until you're 2 weeks out from peak fall foliage. Again, another footnote here, that doesn't work for workshops. We have to roll the dice much earlier than that. This allows you to be flexible should extreme weather rear its head and disrupt the normal progression of fall foliage. Should that not be an option for you, do your planning in early September, when fall foliage experts can give you an idea of whether or not fall color is on time this year. And that's kind of what we're doing right now with this podcast. I wanted to wait until the experts could make their predictions so that we could actually talk about time and place. So let's talk about this map itself. I'm going to start this, by the way, you can be as early as September on this map, and it looks like well into November, and it has a slider. So I'm going to start with October 7th. And the reason why I'm starting with October 7th is that's when things are really cooking in a lot of areas. And so as you look at the Northeast, as they talked about up in Maine, Vermont, that area, it is intense red in early October. Now, when you get into more of the heartland of the U.S., the Midwest, it is still yellow, which is low color at that time. But if you go further north, if you go up to North Michigan and go way up into Montana and those areas, then again, you're getting some very bright red colors. Colorado, this time of year, October 7th, the whole state is covered with either orange or red, and sometimes past peak color, believe it or not, in Colorado, in western Colorado, as early as October 7th, it can be past peak color. But the eastern side is very much in high color, and the southern part of the state is pretty intense in peak color. So Colorado, of course, is a great state for fall color. And looking at this map, I can totally see why. Because a lot of states or a lot of areas have a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And then, Colorado in early October is just covered in color one way or another. It's just a matter of degree. Now, when you go out west, then things as early as October are really less intense. The good news is for California, once you get up over the Sierra Nevada mountains onto the east side of the mountains, then as early as the first week of October, you do have pretty intense fall color. And the way that it works, for those of you that like to come out to California for photography, is that on the west side of the mountain, and that's the side where Yosemite is, that's mainly green. So that's conifers and pine trees, all that kind of stuff. There is fall color mixed in with that. We do have trees that turn, but when you get up over the mountain, over the Sierra Nevada, come down on the east side where Highway 395 is, on the Nevada side, that area, that has a whole different climate, and that's where the aspens are. And the aspens, in my opinion, if you live in the western United States, are just magical in terms of fall color. They're one of my favorites. Going up into Oregon and the state of Washington, Oregon in early October, it's more in central Oregon, not on the coast so much, although there is a little bit of color here and there, but mainly in central Oregon. But as you get up to Washington, the state of Washington, then the color is a little bit more west side of the state. And that's because Washington is north of both California and Oregon. So that northerly position makes the color come a little bit earlier. Now, when you're down in the lower states, Texas, Mississippi, Louisiana, Florida, in early October, it's all green down there. It's all green, not a whole lot of color. You really have to go up to Missouri and those areas, Nebraska, to start to see any color at all. Okay, so this is first week of October. Now let's go to, I'm going to move this forward to October 21st. Okay, October 21st, things really change. So in the northern areas, the areas that had peak color a couple weeks ago, they will be past peak color. So northern Maine, past peak color. Oh, you're way up in Montana and that area, northern Idaho, past peak color. Northern Michigan, past peak color. Parts of Seattle and the interior of Oregon, you're already past peak color. This is a prediction, of course, by the 21st of October. And then on the eastern side of the Sierra, it's also too late, according to the prediction, for peak color. We're past peak color where we are there. On the western side of Sierra in California, that's where we'll start to see some color. So that's low color in that area. And then the color does start to work down into the southern states a lot more. So now the northern parts of Georgia and Mississippi and Louisiana are starting to show some color as early as October 21st. The lowest part of the United States, Florida, southern Texas, still green, even as late as October 21st. Now I'm going to keep moving the slider and we're going to go to the first week of November. Now we're past peak color in basically the whole upper half of the United States, but we have the color moving south. So those southern states are now starting to show a lot more color basically everything but the southern part of Florida are showing some color in early November. And in California, now on the west side of the Sierra, we will see moderate color and low color depending on where you are. Also down in southern Arizona, we start to see some color. Northern Arizona is peak color this time of year. And again, remember, it's much further south than, let's say, when we're talking about Idaho or Montana. So it's coming a little bit later. It's really fun to work this map on explorefall.com and really watch to see how the color progresses from, let's say, late September, early October, all the way through early November. And then, of course, as you move past early November, let's say that we get into Thanksgiving, then we have color. We're having some peak color in the lower part of the southern states. We actually start to get some color in Florida. We get color in the Bay Area, the interior of California, and southern Arizona. But everywhere else, we're past color. You have a pretty good time frame to work in. And actually, if you're willing to travel about, you could actually hit fall color two or three times during the 2025 season, basically starting in the north and then working your way south. And just you could just sort of follow the color as it happens. So I have this map for you. And then I have another link in the show notes. And it's another fall foliage prediction map. And it's the SmokyMountains.com site. And they also have some great information about fall color, some background, some science information. They actually show the how the chlorophyll breaks down and then basically hands it the leaves over to other compounds. The compounds that make the oranges, like beta carotene and the reds and the yellows. It's really kind of fun when you get into it, how this whole thing happens. I mean, even though it feels magical while we're there, it's all quite scientific. So what I'm hoping, with all fingers crossed, is that this prediction map, both of these prediction maps, are accurate, because if they are, I'm going to have two really pretty workshops this year, and hopefully you will be out and you will get some fantastic shots yourself. Fall color is right around the bend. Get your cameras ready. Let's take a look at a little camera industry news. I have some interesting stories for you this week. 8 Lightroom hacks every outdoor photographer should know, and this is on Outdoor Photographer, and I have a link in the show notes. Now, I'm going to give you here the hacks that are presented in a video, and I highly recommend, if you're interested in these hacks, they're not really hacks, they're techniques. You know, not everything is a hack. Sometimes it's just a technique that we don't know about, right? But at any rate, if you're interested in these 8 techniques, then I recommend watching the video, because it's quite good. He does a great job on explaining these. And these are very good techniques. Now, these are for Lightroom Classic. I made sure I paid attention to that when I was watching the video. So these are Lightroom Classic. Let me give you the 8 techniques that he covers in this video. And again, the link to it is in the show notes. Number 1, targeted color adjustments without guesswork. I think this is a very powerful tool, the targeted adjustment tool in the HSL panel. It's fantastic, and he does a nice little tutorial on how to use it. Number 2, sharpen only what matters. So what he's talking about here is that if you have a subject that you want to sharpen, but let's say you have a background or a sky or something that you don't want to sharpen because it will increase the noise, he shows you a very easy way. I mean, it's super easy on how to basically only sharpen the subject and not the continuous tone areas. And I'll give you a hint right now. It's holding down the Alt Option key while adjusting the masking slider in the detail panel. But he'll show you exactly how to do that. Number 3, reveal hidden dust spots instantly. Shoot lots of skies. You're probably sitting on a few sneaky dust spots in the healing tool. You can check visualize spots and use the slider to highlight sensor dust like forensic light, then zap it with a click. Number four, fine-tune exposure without clipping. And again, he's going to show you how to use the option key while adjusting the whites and blacks sliders. Very, very good technique. Straighten horizons in seconds. This is number five. Use the straighten tool next to the crop panel's angle setting. Number six, one-click mask previews. Using the masking tools like the brush or radial filter, tap O to show where the effect is applied. Number seven, create panoramas without Photoshop. And Lightroom can merge multiple overlapping images and it does it quite well. I love using this tool. I also use the HDR tool in Lightroom. And then number eight, cull thousands of images in minutes. He'll show you how to speed up your workflow with two killer tricks. So this is a really nice video. It runs only 10 minutes, so you could watch it on a coffee break or during your lunch or something, and just really brush up on these very powerful Lightroom techniques. The article is on Outdoor Photographer and a link in the show notes. This article is 7 AI tools every photographer should actually be using, and it's on fstoppers.com. Again, a link in the notes. So we did 8 Lightroom techniques, and I thought, well, now I'm going to follow it with 7 AI tools every photographer should be using. And I'm just going to run through these because these are pretty cool. This caught my eye, and I bet you, you're using more AI than you actually realize. First one, effortless subject and sky masking, using AI for that. Number two, advanced noise reduction that preserves detail. Number three, AI-powered portrait retouching for natural results. Okay, I'm going to put an asterisk on number three because I have played with this and I usually find myself backing it off just a little bit. Just a little bit. Number four, generative fill and intelligent object removal. I think we're all using that now, regardless of which app you're using. It's so darn handy. That's a real game changer, isn't it? Conceptualizing and planning photo shoot ideas. That's number five. I think that's interesting. Streamlining client communication and marketing. And number seven, accurate transcription for client meetings and creative direction. So the last three are really for people that are running photo businesses, in my opinion. But the first four, I have to say, are pretty much for all of us. And this article's on fstoppers.com. Again, some pretty good reminders. And if nothing else, just to also remind us that all AI isn't terrible and ruining our craft. Some of it is actually quite helpful. Here's an article on Petapixel that caught my eye. Meta unveils first Ray-Ban smart glasses with built-in AR display. And I'm really kind of curious, you know, this never comes up. Like when I'm hanging out on the Inner Circle site or I'm at workshops, we never really talk about, you know, these glasses that Meta has been working on for years, and they just released the latest version. And I mean, I've been hesitant to play with them because I'm always worried about being viewed as creepy, you know, walking around just sort of filming things. You have to be careful where you look, right? Because people, hey, are those camera glasses? Are you taking pictures of, you know, my kids? No, I'm not. I'm just looking. Sorry. I never wanted to deal with the awkward situations, and maybe it's less awkward these days. I don't know. But there's a new pair of these things out, and I'm going to read you a little bit about it. Meta unveiled Meta Ray-Ban Display, its first pair of AI smart glasses with built-in augmented reality AR display, at the company's annual developer event. MetaConnect 2024, the company's developer conference, took place at its headquarters in Menlo Park in California on Wednesday. Why wasn't it Meta 2025? Wouldn't it be MetaConnect 2025? Possible typo here. The event featured keynote from Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg, where he announced several new smart glasses products. He also introduced a neural wristband designed to work with the new Meta Ray-Ban display glasses, enabling users to complete tasks such as sending messages with small hand gestures. Quote, glasses are the only form factor where you can let AI see what you see, hear what you hear, and eventually generate what you want to generate, such as images or video, Zuckerberg says during the keynote. The new glasses have a small digital display screen on the right lens for basic tasks such as notifications, messages, and Meta AI prompts. The display also functions as a viewfinder when taking photos. The Meta Ray-Ban display glasses include built-in audio, up to 6 hours of battery life, and come bundled with the new neural wristband, which translates hand gestures into commands such as replying to texts or answering calls. They'll launch on September 30th for $799, and they're equipped with a 12-megapixel camera, full-color high-resolution display, built-in one lens, allowing viewers to view calls and messages. And I'm just curious, what do you think about this? Maybe I'll post, you know what I'm going to do, Inner Circle members? I'm going to post a poll on our Inner Circle site so we can talk about this, because I'm curious as to what you think. We just have not been discussing this at all. Finally, one last news story here, and this is on digitalcameraworld.com. I have the link in the show notes, and it's called I Believe Artists Should Suffer. Photographer Sally Mann's comments on rejection, grief, and passion are a must-watch for any struggling creative. I thought this might be something that you're interested in. She sat down with CBS journalist Anthony Mason to discuss her new memoir. The interview and the tour of her Wet Plate studio offers glimpses into not only the memoir, but also Mann's insights into dealing with rejection, handling insecurity, and channeling passion. Listening to a renowned artist discuss the struggles of rejection and insecurity is a refreshing insight for any creative struggling with imposter syndrome and self-doubt. Quote, I believe artists should suffer, Mann wrote in her new memoir. Without character, you will have nothing to say. So then they have a link to this on YouTube, so you can just watch it. Just click on the link, go full screen, and just watch the whole thing. I think it's kind of fascinating. I like her work a lot, and I think she's an interesting artist. I haven't watched this video yet, but I will soon. And I thought you might be interested in it as well. Let's take care of a little Virtual Camera Club news. I want to give a shout out to our Inner Circle members, some of whom I will be seeing very soon in the Eastern Sierra and in Sonoma County. By the way, we have one seat open for the Sonoma County Autumn Workshop. So if you're jonesing to get out there, hopefully shoot some fall color, if I'm doing my math correctly, using the map appropriately, and also do things like go to Safari West, do a little educated wine tasting, go out to the coast, all that good stuff. You can go to our workshops page on Nimble Photographer or Digital Story to learn more and sign up for that. And the reason why I mention it in this segment is because Inner Circle members get a 10% discount on all workshops, including the physical workshops. So that's nice. That's nice. That will pay for a couple things while you're on the road. Big thanks to our Inner Circle members. And I'm going to post that poll about the Meta glasses, the smart glasses. I'm very curious to see what you guys and gals think. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. nose around a bit, sign up, and then you'll be hearing from me with all the goodies coming your way. Thank you, Inner Circle members, for your continued support. Also, would like to give a shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. So I had a follow-up conversation with my soon-to-be daughter-in-law, and it's really interesting to listen to what she wants to do, not only for the invitation, but also for the Save the Date card. And the Save the Date card sounds really cool in that she wants to do like a photo strip thing, like you would get in a photo booth, and where it has like three shots in a photo strip of them. And then that would be the Save the Date card that she would send out. And I love that her creative juices are flowing on this. And what my job in all of this is to help provide the tools to her that she would need so that she can make her vision come to life. And that's exactly what Red River Paper is so good at, is providing us with the resources and the paper and the ink and everything that we need, envelopes, to make our what we have in our head, our creative vision, come to life physically on paper. It's really fantastic. And you can explore this for yourself by clicking on the Red River Paper tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Nose around a bit, look at some of the projects, get some ideas, get some paper, and make some cool stuff. And a huge thanks to Red River Paper for sponsoring this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more cool stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, make some plans. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.